much time.
And this will be one of these episodes where we're not, you know, our minutiae line-by-line history of the place is not going to be...
we don't ask them to dig up their tile or anything.
It's not going to be pinpoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the narratives and the stories about what makes a good old bar a good old fucking bar, we can't wait to tell you about it.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 33 of the History by the Glass podcast. It's your tour of Portland, Oregon's famously historic and infamously endangered bars, pubs, and saloons. Tonight, it's our season 3 season opener. We're heading off to Southeast Portland Festive Dive to get fingerprinted, processed, and spend a little time in the Slammer. I'm your co-host, Nathan Begale. With me, as always, directly to my right, is my good pal, my better drinking buddy, the Clavin of my Peterson, Alfredo V. Moreno. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, season 3, baby.
Did it. We made it.
We're still here.
All of those people who said we wouldn't last one season, I got news for
you. Thanks, Mom.
Yeah, you've obviously stopped listening by now, so there's no need to call you out. But here we are. We are so excited. Cheer. Oh, but before we get too far, please.
We shall.
Oh, my gosh. It's like we forgot how to do this. Cheers, buddy. Okay, let's
start. Having a nice, good sip of the good ale.
That's good. That amber business is nice tonight. Now, what am I drinking?
Yeah, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a large gallon of Miller High Life.
The tear running down my cheek.
Yes, exactly.
So nice to see you.
I went to the 7-Eleven, and they had a large vessel of High Life, and I thought, well, this would be nice for the podcast tonight. Because of course they didn't have hams, because nobody owns hams anymore. Nobody has hams anymore.
Well, this is your quart of Miller High Life. Yeah, this is one quart. And you know, once upon a time there was bars who would just serve them in the quart, and you would just pour them yourself.
Not anymore, my friend.
No.
Anyway, that's what I'm drinking. But please tell me, Alfredo, what are you?
Well, I'm drinking something a little interesting this evening. I am drinking a. Highly sensible and easily repeatable semi-automatic Modelo Oro. That's right. That's the gold standard light beer. 90 calories and 3.0 grams of carbs. That's 4% alcohol in a very skinny can. And do you want to know why I chose this as my drink of choice tonight?
Oh, because you're looking after your can and wanting to make sure that it's as skinny as possible.
That's right. That's because later, in a few minutes, we're going to tell you about a place that we visited, where I come from, where hardened men sit at dark bars and drink buckets of light beer, and no one ever talks shit or raises an eyebrow about those drinking habits.
Not
us. It's not a 7.5% IPA. It's a strange land we're going to tell you about soon, but we have some other things we want to brief you on first, right?
We certainly would. Absolutely. We just want to brief you on, this is our welcome, by the way. I hope whatever you're drinking, I hope it's treating you well. This is our third, what we're calling our third season. What does that even mean? Well, the first season was devoted all to the books by Paul Pendrich, our namesake, which we probably illegally ripped off. We've been blessed by the family. We would never go against that family. Our second season is all about us trying to fill our own calendar. We filled a calendar year of going to different bars, and we obviously took a hiatus between 2 and 3, just a little bit of break, and now we're back for season 3.
That's right.
Yeah. What are you excited about, Alfredo? I'm going to put you on the spot
here. Yeah, please.
What are you excited about for this new season coming up?
Well, I continue to be excited that, you know, season 1, of course, took us about 4 years.
Yep.
So it's not the Gregorian calendar. Yeah. It's its own calendar. We did have a little slight shtickle of a pandemic in that era.
A big old 30-month pandemic.
Yeah, but I'm so excited to carry on the momentum of season 2, where we actually... it took us a while. We did one episode in November and then didn't do episode 2 until March.
We were still getting our legs underneath us there.
Yeah,
you know?
But then after that, this is the metronome. Boom.
I am very excited to keep up this and keep that note. Keep that beat going.
Episodes.
Yes, absolutely. I'm going to Billy Joel this thing through the entire. Hey, yo, the season 3 is. What I'm excited about is that we are committed and we know that we can do it. We are committed to the pace of one episode a month.
Herculean.
From the late February.
Frenetic podcast. Exactly. Does anyone go faster than one a month? I don't think so.
I don't know how you do it.
No, I don't think any podcast in America is faster than one a month.
If they say they are, they're lying to you. Yeah. And you should unsubscribe immediately. But thank you to all of our subscribers who have got us this far, where we are committed and we know that we can do one episode a month.
Believe it or not, more people listen to season two than did season one.
I believe it.
I think some people call that growth.
I think we're doing the damn thing.
Yeah. So I'm excited to keep, you know, it's just subtle refinements.
Yes.
You know what? We remembered this evening that in most episodes of season two, we forgot to pour our beers into a glass for the toast. So most episodes started with a dull aluminum on aluminum thud that was barely audible.
That's right. We bought these glasses and we didn't even toast in them.
Yeah,
we just
now
clunked, you know, our tall boys into each other.
We just keep fine tuning. But if you're a golfer out there, it's a lot like your golf game. The more you do
the reps in you,
the more confident you are. And that's
end on a good
the
one.
The more you want to do it.
And it's thanks to listeners like you who constantly send in feedback saying, why are you still doing this? Why don't you clank your glasses together, guys, instead of clanking your clans together. Ooh, boy. And we're very thankful for our listeners like you. So to pivot real quick, we're celebrating season three, which we're starting right now. But obviously, we took some time off from our big last episode, the Wishing Well, our Christmas, our holiday episode, to now, which if you're listening to this when it releases, hopefully still in February, but it could be in March. Yeah. We don't know. What did we do during that time?
Yeah, well, very special.
HBTG hiatus. Boys, got a little crazy, got a little nuts.
Yeah, well, I have a 82-year-old father who is more or less the inspiration for all of my, a lot of my best traits and many of my worst traits. But he is the reason why I am a bar man, an aficionado of the bars and the bar communities, and especially the old traditional local bars. And there's a place at the tip of West Texas called El Paso. And when I go see my father, I enjoy a lot of different places there. And one time it occurred to you, Nate, and occurred to me, but we said, why don't you tag along?
I said, next time you're going down to that El Paso, because you go regularly, like you said, check in on your pop and also to connect with your roots, where you're actually born.
Yeah, that's right.
I said, you know, next time you go, what would you say if I just came along?
Yeah, hell of an idea.
Saw what the hell.
Radical idea to take a...
to see something else.
Take a, you know, tenderized, Milwaukee, Southeast Portlandish guy like yourself and... bring them to the borderlands.
It was, and that's exactly what we did. So
we did it. We jumped on a plane and went.
The beginning of this month here, February, we checked out El Paso. First time, your 30th, 50th, 60th time, it was. Listen, to spoiler alert, we're both wearing the swag that we picked up on that trip.
That's right.
Unprompted by either of us.
So. I'm just going to lay out some of the cold hard facts, and please, I would love to hear your impression of it. We went down there. Now, you know, my dad, as he still gets around his area of town, he goes to his bars, and he makes his rounds, and that's how he lives alone. But he has bar communities that he stops in and they check up on him. And that's how I know he's doing okay. From, 2,000 miles away, I see him. I know he's going to his little bars. So we go down there to drink. We're not there to play shuffleboard. He's at the bars at his time, and only his time does he go to his bars, usually.
It is a Steve Jobsian schedule of keeping in
you
line.
You adapt to his schedule. He doesn't give a shit about your schedule. Mm-hmm. But I knew we would go down there and we would have ample time to go explore. I was excited to show off that place, that beautiful city on the border. That's what we did. We ended up going to some 22, we made like 20-ish bar visits at, or 24 bar visits at 21, distinct bars over the course of three nights.
Yeah. And we hit four states. And also four states doing it. Yes,
and that includes the travel down and a quick layover in Vegas for a shot, and then right back on the plane. We did the damn thing. Holy shit! We sure got after it, just a pinch.
We sure did.
I would love to hear your, you know, I would love to hear your high level thoughts about the experience of going to such a place and being in that environment.
Sure. Well, first to call your father a part of the community is selling it a little bit short there. He's a goddamn legend, and every place he walks in, it's it's Fred everywhere he goes, which is so wonderful to see. The thing that I was taken aback by, and I don't know if I was looking for it or it just found me, was the damn friendliness of the place. Yeah. Like every single person was filled with the hospitality that we find so important and limited in the interactions that we have in our bar staff and bar communities. And you know, it's not the dark, dreary, head down drinking communities of hipster Portland, Oregon, or old Portland, Oregon, of any of those. I was really taken aback by the friendliness of the place. And you know, obviously it's heavily, I mean, I've never been to El Paso, and I never looked up El Paso. I never did any research on El Paso. Obviously it's heavily influenced by the border. You can see it from the damn bar you drink in. We drove by the Blessed Wall, which was weird to see.
It's weird.
To be honest, it's weird to see.
Sure. Yeah.
But it is so distinctly American in my eyes. Yeah. It is sprawling. It is a healing community, but it's just overflowing with that hospitality. And my heart couldn't take it in both the amount of friendliness and also the heartburn that I found from the domestic beers that were poured down my throat. I had immediately switched to Jack Daniels, which doesn't affect me for some reason, but a bottle of Miller Lite will send me to the Tums bottle of before anything
else. It is the land of macro light beers. And that is what you drink down there, with an occasional tequila and soda, a little ranch water action.
It was great. I remember, actually, this is funny. I remember one of the first times we went drinking, you ordered a Tecate and you asked for salt and lime. It must have been at like Gators or something.
I always have to ask here.
And then when we got into town, into El Paso, the first place we went, you ordered a Tecate and they set you up, quote unquote.
Every other place set you up with here's your lime, here's your salt.
And I thought, I totally get, like,
it's orthodox.
The religion of the domestic.
I'll throw in,
please.
You know, just that I think, you know, my highlight as a hometown boy, to bring a guest in and to see a guest just really see the place that you're from with fresh eyes. El Paso, Texas, you know, Texas in general. I know this is an Oregon crowd, and wherever your politics are, you might think one way or the other about Texas, but by and large, wherever you are in Texas, it is a friendly ass place. El Paso definitely exemplifies that. And we went to some great places. I think we could count, of the 22 places, we had three that were like,
talk to me about some of these,
you know, somebody didn't really give us the time of day.
Sure.
The rest were just overflowing with just the welcome folks. Hey, to have a great, you know, the things we love, our friend Andy Mason at the Stockpot Broiler, the conviviality of like, we're glad you're here. And we're going to tell you that we're glad you're here. I will say we could list them all, but we want to wrap up and move on to tonight's episode. But, I definitely got a shout out a place that I'm wearing that you have a hat from called The Tap.
Yeah.
An old place downtown, founded in the 50s. We went into The Tap. I knew you'd love it. It's dark as hell. It's got a little tiny window. The rest is dark. The bar is 400 yards long. and we went in on two separate occasions, because the first time we went, had our drinks, enjoyed, and took a little photo on the outside on the History by the Glass Instagram page, and immediately got hit up by the owner and said, "We're so glad you came to The Tap. Come back. We're going to give you a shirt, a hat. We're just so glad that you were here. And of course, we couldn't turn that down. So the next day we showed back up, collected our gear. And by God, we had to crack a few more. And this was after a long day of drinking.
Why wouldn't we?
And we, you know, they had the, you know, the lady singing a one woman karaoke with just and one woman MC and Spanish and rapid fire Spanish. And you didn't understand a word she was saying.
Nope.
I barely did. But you knew what the spirit.
I knew
the
vibe, man. Yeah, I picked up them on the vibe, and we did chuckle to ourselves at the one place that acknowledged us as quickly as possible was somewhere outside of the Portland, Oregon area where we celebrate the Portland, Oregon.
We don't mind being acknowledged.
Star bars and yes, it's but regardless, it's not to say anything negative about Portland.
We love to wear the t-shirts.
Positive, exactly.
We love t-shirts. We love gear.
Exactly. I am wearing actually the
King's X.
The King's X.
My mother and father both independently hung out at the King's X on the west side of El Paso. Shuffleboard, darkness,
giant rectangular bar. Some of the best food I've had in my life attached right next to it. And listen, I was brought up on Tostitos salsa, and every place I went to just blew my mind of all of the free chips and salt they just put down in front of you, and is the best thing you've ever had in your life.
So,
yeah,
if you're listening to this, our fine fellow Oregonians who may be saying, what the hell are these guys doing? Why are we opening like this? If you like this podcast, you like old bars, you like places where you feel welcome and you feel like you belong, even if El Paso is essentially to most folks who only know Oregon, is kind of a foreign country. It's very, very different ethnically, historically. It's very much Mexico with a big old Texas twang on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a place where you can go and feel welcome. And I hope anyone listening, whatever excuse you have to be down there, please go visit.
Absolutely. And if not there, pick a place and say, hey, my buddy appreciates this place. I love my buddy. I'm going to try to dive in on this city and this culture and go all in.
Love it. I appreciate you being there. Now let's get on to the show.
This is the city, Portland, Oregon. He's Alfredo. I'm Nathan. We're podcasters. Each month, more and more progress punishes this town. Each day, more and more vintage bars grow closer to closing their doors forever. That's where we come in. Friday, February 23rd, in the year of our Lord, 2024. There are 2 million stories in this ripped city about the Slammer Tavern, a holiday-themed haven, a ramshackle den of sin, a sanctuary for lost souls, or the forgotten corner shack you've driven by 1,000 times. It was time to crack open her secrets. Alfredo, tell us a little known fact, and just the facts, about the Slammer Tavern.
Boy, I thought you'd do something a little more creative for the season 3 opener. God damn it.
Hey now, people want us to take this a little bit more seriously.
Oh. Well done, sir. Well done. If you may or not know, I don't have access to, I usually don't have any access to these intros.
Nope.
I'm always just completely surprised. Mm. God bless you, sir. All okay.
Right. Whew. We'll fix it in post.
The Slammer Tavern history. No, don't fix a thing. It was beautiful. Beautiful. Okay, well, the Slammer Tavern is a little tough to get a little, its history is not super well articulated in any area. So I'm going to give you what I found. This is kind of a little bit of half-ass internet research, although most of it is kind of verified and some stuff we know for sure. So it's established in the late 70s. One place said it is 78, another place said it is 79. talked with some folks at the Slammer that we didn't. My math was not good enough on the spot to figure out exactly when.
Didn't bring my abacus down to the Slammer.
But that's when it took on the name. It took on the name. The story, the commonly accepted story, is that the bar was purchased by one of Portland's finest, a PPD officer, who christened it the Slammer during the single year that he owned it. And then sold it out, and then the name stuck.
Is that the greatest, what was it called? You know, like I've got 365 days to make my impact on the city.
Heat check. That's a heat check.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The heat check on this guy.
Beautiful name. Yeah.
Incredible.
Fantastic.
Is
yeah.
It's still there.
Slammer. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm out. When can I sell this thing? And it'll stay forever.
I did my part, man.
So yeah. But this place has been there's been a drinking establishment here, since 1941, we can confirm that through our good friends at Portland Maps, the sewer records, the sewer permitting. It's actually the plumbing permitting, not the sewer. That just sounds
more... Have you ever thought of running for sewer commissioner?
I should step down from my current obligations.
I just feel like it'd be actually more prestigious because of your investment in these records.
But we know there's been people drinking in that little bar since the fucking war, man.
Yeah.
It was a place at one time called the Jigsaw Tavern from 1944, at least through the late 60s. Mm-hmm. I actually found my first record from the Oregon Supreme Court, State Supreme Court, referencing one of our old bars in some sort of like pivotal landmark case of a guy who was arrested for drunk driving who thought he was unfairly questioned by the trooper who pulled him over. And he'd been drinking at the Jigsaw Tavern from like 11 a.m. till 5 p.m. and owned up to drinking like many, many beers and like several whiskeys.
It is unfair. You're right. That is unfair. The amount of police presence in this bar is fascinating.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Another police issue. Uh-huh. So it's the Jigsaw Tavern, and we'll get to this later. We spoke to the owner, and he talked to us early that in the ceiling, yes, they were doing some renovations or repairs. They were pulling off jigsaw pieces out of the ceiling, which must have been the theme of the place.
Yeah.
This has been a restaurant since 1921, and many places are very quick to throw out the speakeasy, narrative.
Sure.
But I do tend to sometimes get a little credence to the, if you were a restaurant in the 20s and you stayed a restaurant through the 30s and then suddenly you were a bar again as soon as in the early 40s, I would not be surprised if you were doling somewhere. Out. Yes. A little something in those opaque, mugs.
Uh-huh.
The coolest thing historically that I thought about this place was that the building, this building is one of the oldest we've ever encountered. The building itself goes back to 1890. It's this big old creepy mansion house. And apparently this home was a lone survivor from a mass demolition of like an upscale housing development. In the 30s or 40s that cleared the way for more commercial friendly areas there.
You know, what's funny is that if you asked me to draw the Slammer Tavern, I would have never put a house on top of it. I always think of it as that low red shack that sits on the corner there. But
they're kind
of
connected.
Yes, absolutely. Or a house.
Now that 140, 30 year old place has like apartments and things like that. But it also weird doors to nowhere that you can see from the outside.
Hearing about it from the owner, called it the Winchester Mystery House Bar, where you just open a door and there was just a wall and you've knocked down the wall and there was another door.
But 1890, the only place older that I've found, and we have in our little our HBTG records, is Patty's downtown. Patty's the bar is not so old, but the building itself that it's in is back to the 1870s or something. But
gotcha.
The bar, the house, and some of the infrastructure, as we'll hear later, that is part of this bar, some of the walling and stuff like that has been around since 1890.
Which, don't tell older the than McMenamins Huber's,
older
brothers.
Than Jake's.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah. Wow. So. That's, the other part of it is just, which we'll, we didn't have a chance to get fully into, is the current ownership, who's great. We're going to talk about Lizzie, the
talk about the hospitality that we ran into in El Paso, man. Oh, my God.
But we want to shout out the current ownership history, which there's a legendary proprietor, barkeep. We've talked in past episodes about some of these bar men, usually, in town. Your Don Youngers.
Oh, yeah. Your
Frank
buds.
Huber, your Bud Clark, your all these guys, right, who are on site, pouring the drinks, running shop, Stanich, a lot of these guys. But there are some great women who have been running bars. We hope to talk to one in the near future at the Dublin Pub. And right here at the Slammer, Lizzie Robarts, D-I-L-L-E,
Dill.
We should have checked a pronunciation. Lizzie Robarts Dill. She's been an employee there since the early 80s. And we got a chance to talk to her son, who runs the bar with her, who said, my mom was pregnant with me when she started working there. It was fantastic. Yeah. Lizzie was not able to make it tonight, but we spent a good long chunk of time with Christopher.
A great amount of time. Christopher was digging ditches at 9 around the bar. Yeah,
that's right.
He'd been working there his entire life, on and off. And what a kickoff to season 3 in my mind of being able to actually connect with the person who had been in the Slammer, even in utero, for 43 years at some point in the stretch of time.
And this will be one of these episodes where we're not, you know, our minutia line by line history of the place is not going to be.
We don't ask them to dig up their tile or anything.
It's not going to be pinpoint.
Yeah.
But the narratives and the stories about what makes a good old bar a good old fucking bar, we can't wait to tell you about it.
All right, Alfredo, let's get into it. Question we always ask: have you ever been, before tonight, to the Slammer Tavern?
Well, I have.
Great.
I have.
Good to see you there.
I may be a relative newcomer to this town, only since 2010. But by God, I think I probably first went to the Slammer in 2010 and have been there not a ton.
Or the Greyhound lets people off, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, a little straw between my teeth, like Axl Rose getting off in Welcome to the Jungle. But I've been there several times. I've got a lot to say on it. How about yourself? I'm sure it wasn't your first rodeo.
No, I've been there plenty of times. There was a stretch where I hit a lot of bars between 20. We had to have been at the same bars at some point in our lives. 2010 to 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
This was a bar hop stop, and I absolutely remember it. I remember it as a Ham's Bar, which we'll get into a little bit later, maybe right now, where it was one of the beers on tap, maybe the only beer on tap. I can't remember. I do remember
it
being.
Let's talk about what we drank.
Yeah, please.
Was no Ham's.
Was no Ham's, and so I immediately kicked the shit out of the place and say, "Oh fuck that place!" No. I drank a PBR on tap. I thought that was the closest thing I could get to a Ham's on tap, and so I had a nice glass of PBR to start,
and then about 7 Jack Daniels.
Well, you know what. It was closer. I felt like to help Tam the bartender, you know.
That's
it was closer to her and me than
That's right. And you're celebrating the still relatively recent addition of liquor at the Slammer, only for about the last 20 years. I opened up with a High Life, of course, because
that's what I'm drinking right now.
That's right. When in doubt, I go for the smooth, elegant, tapered champagne-like fluted bottle of a Miller High Life.
We're celebrating. We should drink a champagne beer.
One of the things I noted was a very limited beer selection.
Yes, God.
Both bottles and, much to my extreme joy, tap.
Oh, they had 4 taps, and Christopher, the son of Lizzie, who we talked to for so long, and it was wonderful. Explained to that it was maybe an additional 4th. They moved from 3 to 4 in the recent past.
Well, if you're a long time listener of this, which we love you all the most, don't worry. Any of you newcomers, you got a ways to go.
Yeah.
You know that my dream, I think there's way too many goddamn things on tap at every single bar. I think every bar, the perfect bar, I should say, would have three things on tap, and that's regular, light, and special. And the Slammer comes very close because they had Pabst Blue Ribbon. There's your regular.
Yep, that's what I had.
Coors Light.
Oh,
there's your
a
light.
Little light.
And then they had Bodhisattva IPA from Georgetown Brewing, our friends up in Washington.
That feels special.
And then they had a vaporizer as well. So two specials. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
That's pretty but good.
That's it.
Not to kick it back to our El Paso talk, but can we hit on the irony of the tap? That they had no taps?
That's right.
This is great.
The very shirt I'm wearing called the Tap had nothing on tap.
So
zero.
I think we're all getting there. If we follow the path of the Slammer and the Tap, we're going to get there to no taps at all.
Yeah. See, I just don't want anyone sitting there waffling, asking for tasters.
Samples. Yep.
Confused. I'm trying to help.
The number nine.
I'm trying to help people. It's like, you know, the opening to My Cousin Vinny when he just has a choice of breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It's like, what do you think? Breakfast? Two. That's what I want it to be. Beer, wine. Yeah, I'll take a beer.
Well, I would have killed for a breakfast.
That would have been good. That would have been good.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, there is interesting food at the Slammer. Now, most people may not be aware of it. I don't know of anybody. I've never
Here's
eaten
where
at the Slammer.
We really test the definition of interesting.
I've never eaten in the Slammer. Nope. I've never known anybody.
Nope.
I have eaten, but I'll get to that in a second.
I thought there was a sandwich of some kind.
Okay.
But I believe it is like a list of things that would inconvenience people on the whiteboard. And so I had nothing. I could pick from a quesadilla or a grilled cheese.
Yep.
Or nachos or a kielbasa. The kielbasa was the thing that I thought was the most interesting. But yeah, I picked nothing.
Yeah, and very smartly so, because you would have, I don't know how long it took to get a kielbasa from wherever it comes from to the bar stool that you were sitting on.
Well,
smart choice. You got to read that room.
Read the room. We always say, read the room.
You've got to do that. You got to become artists.
Like, I got filet mignon on the mind.
It says you've got it.
All right.
I'm going to order it.
I'm going to have it. I did notice that two people ordered an old fashioned when they walked
in.
Oh,
the drinks. Yeah,
however,
of course. Uh-huh.
However, it was on the whiteboard. It was a house drink for some reason.
That's right. Here's my thought about the food. I wanted to come back to.
Please, I know you do.
What was fascinating to me, and I had the so I looked back there. We were sitting at the end of the beautiful rectangular bar horseshoe kind of a rectangle, and I could see right into the kitchen, which was basically a panini press and a crock pot, and which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I thought, boy, wouldn't it be great if a bar had one of those Foreman grills, or even one of those like Ron Popeil like hot pocket makers,
like
that we all had
room,
in the 2000s,
like absolutely,
I had one.
Oh, I did too. I made patty melts in my dorm, and I was asked not to do it again.
You must go now. Yes, uh-huh. I made so many goddamn terrible, probably ammonia soaked frozen patties, burgers on my Foreman grill. Uh-huh. I made weird shit in the thing where you put like Wonder Bread and these close it and seal it.
Grilled cheese with my iron in my dorm. I did that because I read about it somewhere. And then I also had it with a can of soup, and I didn't know that you had to put water in your can of soup to dilute it in a Campbell's soup.
Very viscous.
And so I called my mother saying, oh my God, I'm sick as a dog. I opened up the can of soup and I started eating it out of the can. I terribly.
What are you wearing? Fingerless gloves?
Well, I didn't know anything back then.
Oh my God.
I didn't know anything back then.
Well, and I had to note, of course you're going to know, I'm going to note one thing that, the food that was most accessible was right in front of us, hanging
out
on the wall.
You could have reached out. What a temptress.
And it was chips on a clip, baby.
Your absolute
And
favorite.
You know, everyone knows I love chips on a clip. And what my
Your
biggest conundrum
yes, uh-huh.
was that it was so hard to decide.
too
many options. It was the All-Star team.
Too many options.
Yo, it was Doritos, nacho cheese.
They did it too well, maybe, huh?
It was classic Lay's. It was Cheetos and Fritos.
Yeah, but... tell them about the fourth quarter substitution.
Oh, later, some cool ranch Doritos and barbecue made an appearance.
I didn't even get a chance to get those barbecue chips off that
clip. Well, I had the idea.
Yeah.
And I thought, This would be a great addition to the whiteboard. Uh-huh. And so, Chris, if you're listening, this is a free one.
Chips. Just write chips on there.
You know, you get one of these big wooden charcuterie boards that my wife has hanging, and you offer a sampler of the Frito-Lay sampler, where you just have little, because I couldn't decide. So this would really help somebody me.
Turn yourself into a Michelin star restaurant.
Oh, bring it out. Yeah. Just offer that. You could save $15 for that.
Maybe you could slice that kielbasa up and put it on
No,
I want Frito-Lay that kielbasa.
Frito-Lay only.
Well, when Frito-Lay makes a kielbasa flavored chip, I'm going to put that right on the right on the board. Let's just zoom out a little bit more and talk about, you talked about this being this U-shaped bar. We were sitting right across from the damn chips. We could grab them where we were sitting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I noted that we were sitting on stools that were bolted down. Not chairs that were bolted down. Not captain's chairs. Stools.
Original stools.
And they're just a little close to each other.
They're close.
As if you had a 1945 weight or size
of human
pants.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Is there anything we should talk about the actual place, or should we just move through our...
We are. Let's go. I have one.
Please.
This is a weird thing. For a place that serves food that nobody goes to eat...
We're talking about the owner food admitted, maybe more than anything else.
I've got
else.
One last thing to say about the food.
I want you to say it, and I want to say my thing, but I don't think I have a thing. So you go ahead and say
it. Well, when I first started going here, when I moved here, Axl Rose off the bus in 2010... I remember going here, and the thing that leaped out of my head, one of the two things initially that leaped out of my head, I'll get to the other one later. The first one was that at happy hour in the afternoon, there was a bunch of little like crock pots around the corner of this great bar, and you could go in. There was no fee. You could go grab a little paper plate and load up a little Smokies and little wings or meatballs, and like a little Super Bowl party was always going on. And from this place, the sponsor of tonight's podcast, Visit El Paso, Texas. I remember this growing up in El Paso. My dad's bars always had down there, they call it a botana. And it's you go into a bar and they feed you something simple and a little bit filling for free so you can keep drinking there. And probably because you've already been drinking for a better part of the day,
you should probably
at those kind of bars, yes, it's maybe a safety thing. But they had that at the Slammer. I've never seen that in any other place.
I wonder if there's some sort of crackdown in like 2011 or 2012 or something. Because I remember walking into the Bounty Hunter, which was on 99, and there being a big crock pot and somebody behind the bar saying, "Help yourself, we're having all this food out of this."
It was either a coding or it was either a government thing or it was people's hoity-toity taste. Don't want a crock pot of little Smokies at their bar.
I bet it was some sort of James Beard thing.
Yep. I'm so glad to see the crock pot was still there. And even Chris, I think we put a little seed. Mm-hmm. He said, "I don't know why we got rid of that." Yeah, it was pretty good.
We're really close. So this is usually the... Let's just move through our
yeah,
our
let's
bits,
keep going.
And then we'll talk about the actual place.
Please.
So please just hold the image of a bar in your head, and then we'll talk about what it actually looks like. This is about the point in time where I review a burger, the bar burger.
How'd that go?
Well, we don't have a burger at this bar, obviously. We've talked about that. But then we always segue, is a real cute segue where we say, "Oh, after you have a burger, you got to go to the bathroom." And then we talk to you about the bathroom ranking. Alfredo, I didn't have a burger to go to the bathroom after, but we had plenty of Jack Daniels to go to the bathroom after. Explain to me what your experience was at the Slammer Tavern bathroom.
My God. Well, I'm going to tell you about the bathroom, and then we're just going to talk about the interior of this place in general after I do.
Yep,
but first,
we're going to move on to musings.
First, we got to talk.
We're moving our optional stop. We're not optional stopping off of our program.
Well, I got to tell you about the... I got to tell you about the bathroom. This place, as you hopefully know by God, if you're listening, I rank every bathroom we go to on a 5 urinal puck scale.
Yep.
These are ranked for memorable. They aren't ranked for luxury.
Not ranked for
memorable. Do they stick in your head?
Premium bidet features. No.
Well,
memorable.
When you walk toward the men's room of the Slammer Tavern and reach for the door, you're immediately, it becomes very memorable because there's no fucking door. There's no door. at the Slammer Tavern men's room.
Amazing.
And it is not tucked away into a deep corner. It's you could toss me a beer from the bar stool we were sitting at, and I'd catch it in the non-door at the urinal. No bloody door.
Yeah.
That in itself, this thing is trembling at a 4.5. And then you got exposed brick. You've got the cell block window looking out in the outside alley back area. Wood shanty interior doors, which are pretty new due to a remodel. I remember these old, like, 60s kind of tile and doors.
Sure.
A large hole in the floor. And then Chris was telling us about some sort of poltergeist scenario where he was renovating the bathroom, kept knocking a thing.
You were sitting house.
Next to him.
Yes.
He didn't want to keep going.
No.
He was afraid of what he'd find
enough.
Out.
I will not touch any of this bathroom anymore. This is enough.
It was so imperfect. He had to keep it perfectly imperfect. And then as for a women's room, I have no idea where it is. Does it exist?
I would think it's at Creepy's Burgers down the place. They must have one.
I could not see it within. I didn't go scouring every inch of it. I didn't ask. I didn't see it. There was many women there, so there must be a women's restroom. I don't know where it is. And we're two trying very hard not to be chauvinistic men here recording this podcast. We don't know where the women's room is.
We should bring a woman with us just so she points to us where the restroom is.
Well, Lizzie must know.
Well, she didn't show up tonight.
This is a five-puck restroom. I will never forget it. I had not forgotten it. It was one of the two things between the little smokies right there by the shuffleboard and the restroom. And I thought, well, I'm really out here, aren't I? I'm almost indecently exposing myself to drinkers.
I thought that this might be our first seven-puck bathroom. I don't think there is a five-puck bathroom other than this one. That's not my rating scale. There were two rather attractive women near the, I want to say it was a Touchtunes, but it also had maybe some sort of game attached to it, right next to the wall where you egress out of the bar into the into the restroom. And I thought, if I whiz in this urinal while these beautiful women are programming the Touchtunes or whatever it is, I think I'll be arrested for some sort of sex crime. I cannot whiz here with knowing that I can see the, I'm looking in the eyes of these. And I thought, oh, well, now forcing me to go into another urinal, memorable. Like making me.
You went into the door?
Yes, I went through the door. Yes, I went through the door.
Wow.
Did you go into the door?
No, I just got closer to the urinal.
The door had some sort of like, giant locking block of like a 1x2 piece of wood. And I asked Christopher, did you make that lock? And he said, you're goddamn right. I made that lock on the door. Thought, yeah, this is great. This is great.
This is one of the most memorable restrooms we've encountered, I've encountered. And it joins one indisputably memorable restroom, the Yamhill Pub, androgynous room,
sure,
of which you evacuate.
Garbage den.
And then the first one, which is a little controversial, and maybe I just was in my cups, but the little tiny room closet phone booth looking thing at Jake's Famous Crawfish restaurant side. Maybe it's a 4.5, but it's forever a 5.
Oh, forever a 5.
Forever a 5 pucker. But this one, you're right. This one is a real 5 pucker. This is a by God 5 plus pucker.
This is your real dandy here. Oh,
yeah.
My God.
No, it was a beaut. But I want to talk about the interior as part of that.
Too. Yes, me too.
After just a quick break.
Okay.
All right. Well, when you walk inside the Slammer Tavern, it is unlike many places you're going to go. The exterior is very memorable. We talked about the house. We forgot to mention the concertina wire and the all the shit up on their little ledge there.
Yeah.
The low slungness of it.
Also, this thing is on the weirdest corner in Portland.
It's like a European roundabout.
Yeah. It's really fucking weird. It's 500 Southeast 8th is what I wrote down.
Yeah.
But I describe it as like the sandy, weird roundabout.
Yeah. Everything diagonal onto the corner.
Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You walk inside and what's the first thing you notice? What's, I mean, the trademark of the place now, it's always Christmas time at the Slammer Tavern.
It is described to me as a Christmas bar. I've told people I'm going to the Slammer and they said, oh, the Christmas bar. And it is not that at all. It is run by enthusiasts of Christmas.
Yeah.
And a great story by Christopher of like, he put lights up one year and just left them up and then people loved them. And so it was more hassle to take them down and put them up.
Yeah, sure. And now it's so big. It's those big like 60s color bulbs too. Oh,
all
yeah.
over the ceiling. It reminded me a little bit of our place in Scottsdale.
Yeah, that's like the Coach House.
Yeah, it's called the Coach House
where it's almost always Christmas.
But it was,
oldest bar in Scottsdale.
Much more Christmassy, I think. But anyway, yeah. I digress. It is bulbed out.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you got that. You've got a. You walk in. Like you got your water cooler.
The vibe I have is like it's always under construction in a great yeah, way. You know, it's like a clubhouse type thing.
Yeah,
like
someone just put it together.
Yes,
I love it.
Yes, we're just holding it together. It's beautiful that way.
Yes, it's exactly, if I was a lad in elementary school, I would sketch it up and dream that
yes,
I would have such a place like this.
You walk in to the left, all the way down the hall is skee ball.
Yeah.
Right? There's like a long bar.
Yeah, the
There's
bar itself long... is our favorite. It's a yep. that... rectangularish horseshoe. You can see everybody across the bar.
It is it's a very, very open bar. Mm-hmm. There's a like a ledge along the window, and yep. that goes all the way to a
Look
ski
out.
Ball
window.
Thing.
Windows are big.
Yeah,
in the,
big,
in the
big
slammer.
Window. Yeah, it's not
dark.
Not your dark. Yeah, yeah.
No, it's not dark at all. With Christmas lights in there. And the windows,
you could take pictures of everybody in this place yep. from standing outside yep. on that. Yeah, and it's great.
Yeah, but ski ball. You've got another room in the back. It was all, it's like the red room. It was these red, like, you know, Kenny Rogers roaster room. Maybe that's where the women's room is. I don't know. Everything's spunky, and I love the funk of the inside of the place. It's divey, but not dirty. It's fun. It's fun.
It's fun. And it's,
vending machines.
We talked about, one thing we noticed is that there aren't any video poker machines.
Not a one.
And I asked Christopher, hey, I noticed there's not any video poker. Yeah. Is it the one thing I regret or the one thing I think about is that I wish we took those video poker machines out sooner because they got on them right away. And he noticed that people were just heads down playing video poker and it's not a bar at that point. It's not fun. It's not a neighborhood community thing. And that's. So, and then he took those out and put skee ball in and it's the din of people playing skee ball versus
makes
them
people
playing...
happy to interact and possibly have another round or two.
Exactly.
It's not sitting there, you know, plugging quarters in. It's a,
and I think that decision is like the thesis of this whole place of, just let people have fun. Let people be who they want to be.
Give them an opportunity to have fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. He noticed that there were people of all types who came in and who enjoyed the bar. Yeah. Tried to get him to peg down like who a regular was, and he couldn't really necessarily do it. And it's all about people who want to have a little goddamn fun. And sorry, but that's a word that's been on my mind a lot lately.
The Slammer Tavern, you drive by, you probably, you know, it would be very easy or understandable to be like, holy shit, look at that hellhole.
Yeah.
It's not like the Yamhill Pub in terms of like, exterior intimidation, but you would be, if you're not used to going to these places, you might say, god damn, look at all that wire and this, what the hell's going on?
I don't want to put you on the spot.
Yeah.
We'll cut this out if it's too much on the spot. We talk a lot about what a dive is and what a dive isn't. Is the Slammer Tavern a dive?
I would say, you know, I've been pretty historically consistent with a dive being a little sense of danger to the drinker. Friendly, you're not serious danger, but a little edginess where you're not sure whether or not you should be there or not. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say, based on that very, very orthodox, strict criteria, not a dive. Physically, it checks every box of a dive. Mm-hmm. The little, you know, the bar is not a big luxurious bar. It's I don't know how to describe it. It's not a dive, but it's not a tavern. It is something almost, it's a unique entity. It's a very friendly dive, if it is one. Yeah. What would you say?
I think that the openness and the windowiness into it say it's not a dive. I think that if you can see into it from the street says
it's jolly.
It's a little jolly. I think that is what I love about it is the, and starting from today, is the family owned thing.
Yeah.
And that is one of the most family owned bars I've felt. The Selwood Inn, we had a great experience with the owner and understanding like the familiness of it. Here I really, really got that.
Sure, of course.
And it's very hard for me to say this is a dangerous dive when there are two people who run this place, Lizzie and Christopher, who seem to have so much like love and respect for drinking and bars.
Yeah.
It's very hard for me to say like avoid, you know, like put your caution, walk in with a, it's not a biker bar. It may attract people who are not, the most, let's see here, Vogue. But also I saw some very beautiful people at the,
yeah, bar. It wasn't an overly tough crowd.
Exactly. It was not tough.
It was youthful. It had a spirit, a youthful energy to it, which is great. All the infrastructure is divey.
Yeah. The cuisine.
Yeah.
The bar, the cocktail.
Yeah. The take no shit servers, you know, starting with Lizzie and everyone, but friendly as can be. But the difference between this and like what we consider is the dive so far for our money is the Yamhill Pub, where when we went last summer, we were a little nervous. About what, just make sure we're not screwing anything up here at the Yamhill Pub.
Exactly.
And it's a fantastic place, but I didn't think twice about what I was wearing or what I was going to, who I was going to talk to at the Slammer. The Yamhill Pub proved to be a very much a dive in that way of like, holy fuck, who am I sitting next to and talking to in all the most glorious ways. But great question. No, I don't think it was a dive, but it is a, just salt of the earth. Just hand hammered and nailed and assembled labor of love bar.
Yes, and he talked a little bit about where it is and the people who came. Christopher did about the people who would come in when he was a youth, and they all being blue collar, salt of the earth people, and absolutely, I got that vibe immediately. That's why this is here, and there for the grace of God, did this place not get bulldozed or condoed over or gentrified or whatever you want to call it?
Survivor,
it's absolutely survived. And you see all of these other places that are just now parking lots or the basement of a high rise or something like that, and for it to still be here is. I don't know. Pretty wonderful.
It's beautiful. And I think, you know, of course, you know, our running joke of cutting to the chase. Of course, we love the Slammer. Of course, we.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Would you go?
We almost never set ourselves up for a place where. But we had a very unique experience tonight in that this was the most of the time when we go to a place, we go. We do in our later, our last season, this season, we try to set up a conversation with a owner or somebody who's passionate about the story of the bar. It hasn't happened very often that somebody wants to actually do it. We were thrilled that Lizzie agreed to, and then was unable to make it and connected us with her son. And we had a awesome, just like wide ranging, who the hell are you guys? And like, okay, what did you want again? But then he gets it, man. He gets it. I think he knows that we get it. The magic of bars, bringing people together. We talked about all the things that go into running an older place. You know, the shocking thing to me, one of the shocking takeaways was that despite its appearances of a hammered together yesterday, you know, the infrastructure of the slammer is, I think he said, if there's a
pretty solid.
When the earthquake comes, if I'm sitting on this bar stool, I will not even, not an ounce of trepidation, because this place is like the most structurally sound building in all of Portland.
Yeah, well, there are reasons why you want to sit at that bar, and one of them is the structural soundness of the place, but others are the actual magic that he talked about.
Yes,
the magic of that connection and the magic of the community, and there's something about Christopher where I he didn't know why we were there for reasons we won't get into. But as soon as we started talking about who we were and what we did, like I could tell he dug it and he was all about it.
And you mentioned the video poker thing, and we've heard from people, many of our favorite bars are filled with video poker. We've heard from our friendly bartenders about how much hand over fist money they make. In this particular case, the fit was also a little bit of infrastructure issues, but also they care about the spirit of the place. They know the building, the ancient building contributes to it. And I just wanted to, my favorite quote of the night in our conversation with Chris was just like, when it comes to treating people the right way, it's just like, everybody wants to be treated like they're somebody. And that's just like that. If that's, transcribe it to Latin or whatever and put it on a crest, on a seal, that is what everyone wants to be treated like they're somebody. And that if that's your ethos of a bar and you've been around for, 45-ish years under the same name and nearly 100 years as a drinking establishment, you're doing well.
All right, Alfredo, it's just about closing time here in the HBTG studio. A huge thank you to everyone at the Slammer Tavern.
Come on.
Okay, well, you can call it the Slammer Tavern if you'd like to, including Lizzie and Christopher. Thank you so much for your time. We are so indebted to your stories and just spending the time with us. My God, it's incredible.
Wonderful. Oh, and let me give a quick shout out,
because
I missed it at the beginning.
Yes.
She won't be listening this deep, but Charlene at the Tap in downtown El Paso.
That's right.
Thank you for the shirt and the hat.
That's
love you.
Three Tap references throughout this podcast. That's sponsored by the Tap.
Portland, Oregon's favorite downtown El Paso bar.
Absolutely it is. Congratulations. But if you want to check out the Slammer Tavern, you can at 500 Southeast 8th, which is basically that weirdo Sandy convergence we talked about. Until next time, we beg of you, please follow us on Instagram at History by the Glass. And you can always shoot us your favorite old bars that you think that we should visit, and subscribe and share via Spotify, iTunes, Amazon. I think one of these closed down at some point.
Yeah, Rick's closed.
Oh, yeah.
No more Google Cast.
And anywhere else, fine. Podcasts are sold. On behalf of Alfredo Moreno, my name is Nathan P. Gale. Please tip your bartender.
Beautiful, baby.
All right,
beautiful.
We're back, baby.
Beautiful.
Hey, you know what? This is season 3. I think that's pretty good. Right?
Yeah.
That's a tight 110 right now on mine.
Oh, wow.
So, and that's like with a bunch of shit to cut out. So yeah, that's going to be a tight long, 50.
Like
a
5 minute.
5 minutes. Yeah. I think that's good. I'm just going to keep her running. See if we pick up any magic on these microphones.
The magic.
Pick up the magic.
Work your magic.